Hello and welcome to Landwise, Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at managing herbicide resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. I'm excited to be joined today by Associate Professor Kerry Harrington and Dr. Hossein Ghanizadeh to talk about identifying instances of resistance. Kerry has been lecturing and conducting research at Massey University in weed science since 1983. Kerry is joined by his research officer Hossein, who originally came from Iran but has been working on herbicide resistance at Massey University since 2011. So Kerry, first of all, what is herbicide resistance and what threat do herbicide resistant weeds pose for New Zealand farmers and growers?
Well, herbicide resistance is where you get a build-up over time of individuals that are not controlled by a herbicide. So you can often get mutations occurring, well, not often, very infrequently, but occasionally you get individuals of a weed species that have a mutation that means that they are now no longer controlled by that herbicide. And that's not a problem if there's just one in a paddock, but if a farmer keeps on applying the same herbicide year after year, that one individual can multiply up, and after a while it can become a high proportion of that weed species in the paddock. So that's what herbicide resistance is about, is building up herbicide resistance, as opposed to herbicide tolerance. So herbicide tolerance is where the weed was never susceptible to that herbicide in the first place.
Right.
So, for example, with glyphosate, it doesn't control white clover very well. It doesn't control tall willow herb very well. And so those are tolerant weeds that haven't built up tolerance. They always were tolerant. But people get confused. They see there's a build-up of white clover because they've been applying glyphosate too much, and they think they've got a build-up of resistance, but that's just a build-up of tolerant weeds, as opposed to, for example, ryegrass that you can get in vineyards where it should die, but because glyphosate's been applied so many times, there's been a build-up of resistance over time.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So why are we so worried about glyphosate resistance? What implications does it have?
The thing is, with the herbicides, you apply them to get rid of the weeds, and they should get rid of the weeds, and you've applied money, and you've spent money on the herbicide, you've applied the herbicide, you want the weeds to be gone. And so the last thing you want is you've spent the money, you've applied the herbicide, and the weeds aren't gone. And so that can be a bit of an issue. In some situations, such as nodding thistle resistance, for example, where it's become resistant to 2,4-D, MCPA, there aren't too many other options available to control it without starting to damage the clover in your pastures.
Right.
So that becomes an issue. But as far as the glyphosate resistance is concerned, it's the main herbicide we use in New Zealand and around the world. But, for example, in situations like vineyards and orchards, it's the main herbicide to get rid of all the weeds. And one of the reasons why we use glyphosate is it controls such a wide range of species. So you put it on and basically everything's gone. So if you start to get weeds that don't die anymore, that makes the glyphosate a lot less useful. And that's what was happening in the vineyards around Marlborough. They were using glyphosate and generally nothing else but glyphosate because it was considered to be environmentally the best herbicide to use. But because they overused it, glyphosate, more glyphosate. We started to get a build-up of ryegrass plants that were not controlled anymore, to the extent that after you put glyphosate on, we just got out a row of ryegrass underneath the grapes. And so basically you had to apply another herbicide to get rid of the ryegrass. And that's what we want to avoid. We want glyphosate to continue being useful. But likewise, in the urban situation, it's the main herbicide for controlling weeds around streets and footpaths and things like that. We want it to continue to be useful. It's the safest herbicide to be used. So we don't want resistant weeds building up, in which case the herbicide is no longer useful.
Right, so it's a growing problem. Apart from the visual test, when you're applying a herbicide and you notice that the weeds aren't being controlled by it, what is the current method for determining herbicide resistance in weeds?
Well, I guess what a lot of farms and growers do is they observe that it's not working anymore and they think, oh, I've got resistance, so it could just go as far as that. But another possibility is they could send the plants in for testing. And at the moment, the testing system is not that great. What we have to do is we have to grow the plants up in a glasshouse, and we need to grow them a number of weeks to the right size, especially if we're starting from seed. Then we have to spray them. Then we have to wait to see whether they die or not. We've got to compare them with another population that we know is susceptible. And so that takes many weeks. It's taking up glasshouse space and taking up our time. Therefore, it's expensive and it's not rapid. Mm. And so that's why generally, if you can find a quick test to do it, then that is going to be much better. And that is sort of research that we've been working on recently to try and come up with quick tests that if you get a sample sent in, that we can have results within, say, a week, rather than having to wait several months to get the results.
Mm, that would be a lot more efficient. So, Hussein, what sort of quick tests are there to determine if a weed is resistant to herbicides, and how is that development of the tests going?
Yeah, there are a few assays for detecting glyphosate resistance in wheat. Currently, we are working on two different assays. One of them is for detecting target site mutations at the enzyme where glyphosate acts, and that's a molecular marker. We call it DCAPs, and that detects the variance at the target enzyme and tells us whether the individual is resistant or not. The other assay, we call it the seed-based assay, that we use seeds. We grow seeds at different concentrations of glyphosate, and then we compare the size of the seedlings between individuals, and then we distinguish resistant ones from susceptible individuals. And as a part of this seed-based assay, we also look at the enzymatic reactions as a result of glyphosate application, which we use some colorimetric assay for distinguishing resistant plants from susceptible ones. This seed-based assay is some sort of universal, which means that we can detect glyphosate resistance regardless of the mechanism of resistance, whereas with the DCAS or the molecular marker, we can only detect the type mechanism of resistance to glyphosate.
Right, so you're likely to catch more of those resistant mutations with the seed test.
Yes, once we have these, because currently we're working on this protocol, it's work in progress, so I'm not saying that we have the seed-based assay ready to use.
Yeah.
But if we got this protocol and we have everything ready to go, then we can detect glyphosate resistance.
Great. So what are some of the best ways to collect samples from suspected resistant weeds, and when is the best time of year or in the weed's growth to do that?
Well, depending on the type of the test, so we require different tissue. For example, with the molecular assay or the DCAPs, we need some DNA extracted from plant samples. DNA can be extracted from any part of the plant, but usually the best part to work with is leaf tissues, which are collected from specimens of the leaf collected from young leaves or young plants because they're easy to work with. But with a seed-based assay, we need seeds. And by saying seeds, I mean mature seeds, the seeds that can be germinated. Like, for example, the seeds, the mature seeds that can be collected from the plants that have completed the life cycle. For example, if we have a plant which they have a green seed head, so the seeds from those will never germinate because the seeds are immature.
Right, okay. And so it's important to match that sample type to the type of test that you're going to be doing.
Yes.
So, Kerry, what does a farmer or a grower need to look out for to identify suspected resistance? And is it worth them, you know, approaching Massey to get that confirmed?
Yeah, just doing the second part first. At the moment, we haven't quite got these quick tests ready to go. So
yes. Yep.
Hopefully in a year or so, then we'll be able to have farmers and growers sending in samples and we'll be able to do large amounts of testing. Because that's what we want to be able to do is just have lots of people sending in samples and we can just work out where the resistance is and where it isn't. And once we detect resistance, then we can suggest to growers that they put strategies in place to deal with that resistance. So it's much better if they are rotating their herbicides and not overusing them in the first place to stop that resistance building up. So if you can avoid the resistance in the first place, that's much better than trying to deal with it once it's there. You have to use alternative herbicides because it's not going to work. But coming back to your question as to how farms know whether they've got it or not, it's really a matter of just being observant. Just looking at what happens after you spray and have a look to see whether weeds that should have died haven't died. What people do get mixed up with was what I was saying about before is the tolerant weeds. For example, most vineyards, they have a buildup of tall willow herb and white clover and mallow. But they are weeds that were tolerant, so it's not a buildup of herbicide resistance. It's a buildup in the vineyard of species that were never controlled by glyphosate anyway. But
right.
That's good to observe as well, because if you're getting a buildup of those sorts of species, that means you are overusing your herbicide and you need to be using other herbicides to stop that from happening. If you're stopping that from happening, you're going to stop the buildup of resistant individuals that might be occurring. So usually that buildup of tolerant weeds happens before the buildup of resistant weeds. But coming back to whether you can see there's resistance there or not, if the species, weed species that would normally die and they haven't died, the most common issue is that something's gone wrong with your spraying. And so it's a matter of trying to work out, is it something that I've done wrong? Did I mix up the herbicide wrong? Or did I not use if you're spot spraying, often it's quite good to mix in a dye so you don't go missing weeds. So you may have just missed weeds. Or if you're using a boom sprayer, perhaps you've got incorrect overlap, in which case the weeds may be all in a strip. And so that's a sign that it was just the way you did the spraying. Or you might have done it when it was too cold or there might have been rainfall soon afterwards. There are a number of things that can happen that are not herbicide resistance. But if a farmer or grower is observant, and especially if it's happened several times in a row and it looks like these individuals that should normally die haven't died and are starting to build up, then that's when the alarm bell should go off. And often what just needs to happen then is for people to start looking at, well, what am I doing with my spraying? Am I overusing a particular herbicide? Should I be rotating it more? So, for example, in an orchard, if you're just using glyphosate all the time, you should probably rotate it with something like Ametrol at the beginning of the season before you're starting to get any fruitful. Perhaps using some glufosinate or Buster later in the season. And also, we've been talking to growers about starting to use residual herbicides again. Although they weren't acceptable to be used for a while, I think most people are now realising that we need to get more herbicide modes of action into the orchard. And so, for example, using something like tergophylazine just to kill off these weeds as they're germinating. They've all got different modes of action. And so if you've got these different modes of action, the chances are a weed that's building up resistance to one won't build up resistance to the others.
Right.
And what we've done is we've actually developed a number of strategies about how to avoid herbicide resistance for the cases that we've got in New Zealand so far. And so people can find that on a website. They can Google it up. So if they Google up NZPPS, which is New Zealand Plant Protection Society, so yeah, NZPPS herbicide resistance, that will take them through to a website where we've put together a number of strategies about what you can do to avoid herbicide resistance building up. And one of the ones that we spent quite a bit of time developing was one for glyphosate resistance. And so for each of the situations where glyphosate is used in New Zealand, we have come up with suggestions about how to rotate your herbicides. And we also talk about the herbicide rotation, the fact that to work out where it's a different mode of action, you can have a look at the lettering system that we have developed and is also on that site. And you can usually find the lettering system on the label of your herbicide as well. So as to whether it's a Group A herbicide or a Group B herbicide or Group C herbicide. Generally, if a weed is resistant to one Group A herbicide, such as Haloxifop, then it's often going to be resistant to a lot of the other ones, such as Fluazifop. And so you shouldn't just rotate a Group A with a Group A. So that is all talked about within that website. So that's NZPPS herbicide resistance. If you Google that up, you should be able to get to that page.
Great. That sounds like an awesome resource for growers and farmers to have a look at when they're thinking about rotating herbicides to reduce that risk of resistance developing. So thank you so much for Kerry and Hussein for taking the time to explain your research. It's definitely something we all need to keep an eye on, and we'll keep following your work to see when we're able to use a quick test.
Thanks very much, George.
Yep, thank you.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. We'll be right back.